This is part two of a two-part podcast.
Hi, this is Mark. There are a lot of reasons to get angry these days, but I prefer to focus on the positive things that we each can do to make this world a better place. The book Building a Better World in Your Backyard, Instead of Being Angry at Bad Guys, is a great resource for just that. Instead of throwing my arms up in frustration at governments or big corporations, there's a list of ideas that we each can tackle to affect change. Information about this book and other resources can be found at permies.com.
As much as my friend complained, he was also intrigued. And I think now he's behind it, but of course I did it all wrong because he wants it to be even. And now he's making the hour-long trip to go buy that organic hay, and he wants to do more of it.
Uh-huh.
And now he wanted to talk about growing a garden, and we did that too. And he and all his garden, all he wanted to grow was tomatoes. And now he did have this next door neighbor that was growing tomatoes in her yard, and I think he kind of liked her. And so he was kind of like, can you help me grow tomatoes? So we did. Now, her tomato plants grew to be like, I don't know, 18 inches tall, and each tomato plant had like 4 tomatoes on it. It was really sad. And now on his plot, I think we planted 6 tomato plants, but it was all with hay mulch. And he had a jungle. He had, out of these 6 tomato plants, he probably had 200 pounds of tomatoes. He had way too many tomatoes, and so he was giving his neighbor tomatoes. And of course, he had no idea what he was doing. And now she's curious about what he's doing. And all right, that's another story for another day. But it's like, is it really a garden if all you're growing is tomatoes? But that's all he wanted to grow. And it's because she's growing tomatoes. Okay. There it says it. We did it too with more of that organic hay, but that's another story for another day. And that was another thing too. It was all lawn where we planted this new tomato garden. And we just smothered all the lawn with a thick layer of the hay, which the donut was also the same thing. We were smothering the lawn with the donut. Okay. There, I've told my story. We've got a couple more things to talk about. Yes. During the thing we're recording today. But, do you guys have any comments about the story of my friend in West Seattle and his trees and his yard and maybe his tomatoes?
Well, I do think that the quickest way to help your soil or your plants do better is to mulch them. You cover the soil with something wonderful and organic that is going to hold any moisture. When you do smother all that grass, it dies and its roots die. And that's just instant nitrogen to give to your plants. You also, if you cover the soil with anything, you'll find all the little worms come up and lay their poop all around on that layer between the earth and your new surface. There's no predators to get them. As soon as you put a covering over there, they're safe to come up. They don't have to hide underground anymore. And then everybody else runs around, and that little space between the top of the earth and the bottom of your mulch becomes this whole new world. And you'll have centipedes and earwigs and all kinds of little creatures coming up, and they hunt each other, and they also poop, and they do their activities that will create that health of your soil. So I think it's the quickest way to change something is just to add a mulch layer. And again, it's the thing where we don't have to figure it out. I don't have to go figure out my fertilizer and pour it in there. I can just cover the land with good hay or other organic mulch, and they figure it out for me.
Now, I could have laid down straw instead of hay.
Mm-hmm. Or a lovely pile of lovely leaves, if you like. But yeah. The hay is going to have a lot of nitrogen, and it seemed like that's what you experienced with your tree. The right-away fix is giving it that nitrogen.
So I would, because I'm looking at all of this, and I'm seeing that the tree has a poor leaf count, and the tree just looks sad. And so I'm thinking, well, yeah, you're growing lawn, and the lawn isn't looking really great either. It looks a little sparse, and I'm kind of thinking like, and when I look at the dirt that the lawn's growing in, it looks like dirt. It doesn't look like soil. So clearly what he's been doing is he mows his lawn too short, and then he bags the lawn clippings, which is the perfect recipe to transform soil into dirt. And so he bags the lawn clippings and he puts it into the green bin that the city of Seattle has provided him.
Yeah, because he could save that and have his own mulch.
Oh, there's so much to say for my friend. And so here I am. He is a musician and a poet and a writer. And he is not a gardener, but he's got a yard and some stuff. And so he does this, he does what he thinks is the thing to do. And he's kind of mimicking what he's seen other people do. And that's kind of it. So, and then there's other things like he sees his neighbor growing a tomato plant and he's like, oh, I want to grow a tomato plant too. And it's like, but what do I do? I don't even know where to begin with that. I mean, where she's growing it, she's clearly ripped out every speck of grass and she comes through every day and rips out any new speck of grass because what she has is dirt and a tomato plant in the dirt. And it's a sad little tomato plant, which never looked, but she waters it all the time and she plucks out any weeds. So, I don't know. I kind of feel like most people, and that's another thing too, is like my friend cares deeply about the environment and we would have, who cares more wars all the time. And I got a lot to say about those discussions. But the thing is both of these people care about the environment and want to do these things, but they also want it to be really easy. But okay. that opens up hundreds of hours of things to talk about. But coming back to this mulch. The grass is going to be very aggressive and tough to compete with, but the tree clearly had a low leaf count. Clearly the tree is nitrogen hungry. And the grass is all looking pretty sad too. And then when I look at the dirt, it's like almost cement. It's so hard and it's so light colored. It's definitely not soil. So yeah, if I smother the grass will die and act as its own mulch, but I gotta smother it. I gotta be complete about it. Now, a lot of people laying down hay, they're very worried. You lay down hay, you're gonna get a bunch of, there's gonna be seeds in the hay and they're gonna take off. And it's like, don't see it very often, but yeah, I've seen it once in a while. And when that happens, I throw more hay over that. And now I'm done. Or I throw some other kind of mulch. Now, granted, what would be really terrific is to, yes, redirect all of this organic matter that's coming from all these sources on his property, stop putting it into that green bin and start putting it out in different places to do different jobs out here. But, I can't believe that I'm saying but. But the hay was a hard enough sell. And it's like, now you're going to, because I love the idea of a mulch being all kinds of wonkadoodle. Like, we're going to make a donut, but it's going to take us like a month to make a donut from all the different bits of organic matter we pulled from all these different places. And we piled it up, and we just slowly made a donut around the tree. So, however, because I did it rather instantly, and the results were rather amazing and rather instant, then I think that went a long, long ways. And I think I finally got him to stop putting stuff into the green bin. I also got him to stop using any kind of pesticides. And I also got him to stop. I kind of feel like if you want to have some fertilizer of some kind, that's okay. But let's get you something like the hay. Oh, why use hay? So, I used hay because all signs said we need nitrogen. And so that's hay. Now, if they didn't need nitrogen for some reason or other, organic straw would have been better. But, and of course, both of you, I'm sure, are well-versed. Why organic? Why not use non-organic hay in this case?
For the same reason we don't want to spray our lawn with pesticide. There's, it takes a lot of pesticide and herbicides to make that hay grow perfect and uniform. Just like the food in the grocery store, like it's got a certain amount of marketability and it needs to be pretty and it needs to grow. It needs to grow year after year in the same soil, the same crop. So they put a lot of stuff on it. So if you get an organic farmer putting organic hay, there's going to be more mineralization in that soil. And so that hay you're getting is going to be richer for your plants and it won't have the pesticides that are going to destroy your garden. So your tree.
All hay and straw that is not organic definitely contains persistent herbicides. And they last like 10 years. That's their half-life. They have a half-life of 7 to 11 years. So if you put this non-organic hay down, the tree will die because the tree's already struggling. And so, granted, you're going to give it all this nutrition and you're going to give it poison. However, the persistent herbicides tend to be broadleaf herbicides, which means it only kills anything with a leaf, with a broadleaf. It does not kill grass. So the grass is going to be like, I'm getting all this great food. I'm so happy. But the hedge is going to be sad. The tree is going to be sad. Everything's going to be sad. So it's got to be organic. Okay. I think that there's, I mean, you know, all kinds of different mulches that we could talk about now, what their effect would be. But because I observed that there was a strong need for nitrogen in this spot, I decided to go with hay because hay is like not yet compost. If you just took hay and you got it wet, it would compost all by itself. So it's going to effectively compost in place, which is going to, as it breaks down on the bottom side, which is touching the soil, it's going to feed the soil. Okay. Anything more about my friend in West? So Clay, do you got anything?
No, I think I'm good on this one.
Okay. All right. I want to mention Back to Eden Gardening. So, this is a guy on the Olympic Peninsula and, he'll lay out wood chips, 3 to 8 inches thick. And then he does the gardening. And so, I've never heard of him doing a soil test or anything like that, but I have heard of people who have tried to do his technique, and there's a couple of big problems with the technique. I mean, it's great technique. I mean, basically he's doing a deep mulch, which is wonderful. It's a very high carbon mulch, and that can work. It does work. It is great. There's a couple of caveats. Caveat number one. If you're going to put a whole bunch of wood chips on your soil, and it ain't soil, it's dirt, it could take you 10 to 20 years until a garden starts to present itself because there's not enough soil life to start breaking down those wood chips. And so it's kind of like nothing happens. You lay down all these wood chips and nothing happens. So there's been a lot of people who have tried to emulate this whole process and they did not have success because of that. The other big caveat, the reason why I think you probably shouldn't even try. There are ways to try it and have it work, but I think almost everybody is going to get in too much of a rush. And it's going to not work for them. And here's what it is. Is it's like, so somebody, has a yard with a bunch of trees in it. And they got grass. And then they spray a persistent herbicide to make it so that for the next 10 years or longer, they don't have to spray their grass anymore. And so, all of the dandelions die, all of the aro dies, all of the things that are not grass dies. And then it's like that big maple tree in the yard. Is that a type of grass? No, it is not. It doesn't, it might just get sick and stunted, but there's a chance that it will die. And so then they call the arborist and have the arborist come out and they say, we need you to remove this dead tree. It died for no reason. And well, we know what the reason is, doesn't matter. So they're going to, the arborist comes and takes the tree down and they chip it. Then they try to find some sucker to take the wood chips. And there's somebody who's all excited about the Back to Eden gardening is like, I want mountains and mountains of wood chips because I'm going to do Back to Eden gardening. So now they've got all these wood chips that have taken in all that persistent herbicide. It's in the wood chip and it's going to last. It's going to last years and years and years. And so their garden is basically poisoned. The only thing that they can grow is grass in this place where they're trying to grow vegetables. So this is why I say for most people, it doesn't work. And I also say with all of my stuff, never get a wood chipper, never use wood chips. There's a way to get wood chips that are going to work for you. But I mean, like, it's a long and complicated process. And on top of that, even if I explain it carefully to somebody 7 times, they still get the wrong thing. And then they're angry that suddenly they've got persistent herbicides where they want to have a garden. So, the wood chips option may be different for different climates. I would say that there is some truth to that as well. So if you have if you live in a tropical climate and you lay down a lot of wood chips, they're going to disappear pretty fast. As the soil microorganisms, you know, are very hungry and they eat that stuff right up. And then there's going to be places like where they have peat moss, where they have peat moss and they harvest the peat moss. Basically, the organic matter there has accumulated year after year after year, and now they can go and cut it away, and here's some 10,000-year-old peat moss, which they turn around and sell. That's another. It took one kind of organic matter and made another kind of organic matter. But yeah, it does. It is going to work different in different climates. But overall, I would have to say that. Everybody listening to this right now, you're going to be far happier just not touching wood chips, not making them, not getting them, not importing them. Just don't touch it. In fact, generally speaking, don't import. Because even if it's organic hay, they only need 3 years to be able to label themselves as organic, which means that 4 years ago, they put down persistent herbicides. Those persistent herbicides are still in this organic product. And so, now granted, most of the time that you go to get organic hay, it's probably going to be something where it's more like at least 7 years or at least 10 years old. But it's possible that you could have organic hay that still has persistent herbicides in it. So it's better to just find a way to do these things without importing anything. All right. Any questions or comments about the Back to Eden stuff? Really good and really bad at the same time.
One thing that comes to mind also is when I have used a lot of wood chips, I get a lot of pill bugs. And so those, there's kind of a, and I think this goes back to climate a bit. You have some give and take where you have to watch what's happening with what you're using. And so I think that I'm also in the middle, more on the avoid wood chip spectrum. Not only for everything you mentioned, but also the ability to bring, the happiness for pests that might want to just destroy my garden. Whereas lawn clippings and stuff that I have readily available on site, they tend to do that less for me.
anything you have on site is going to be better, because if you've got organic standards or way beyond organic standards, then all of this excess growies that you got here that are like, because, well, all of those are now beyond organic, and they're going to be an excellent mulch. And then on top of that, as you feed back into the system, now you're going to have 10 times, 20 times more growies on your plot. And a lot of that is stuff that's going to be an excellent candidate for chop and drop. So now you're just growing all this organic matter that's going to help refeed all of your systems. That is the premium stuff. And then if you're like thinking like, okay, I want to try to grow some stuff that, I'm starting with such dirt. It's such terrible dirt. Then, there are ways to bring in some fertility. I think, and you know, boy, I'm going to catch hell for saying this, but I think the number, and I'm sure both of you know this already. If here you are on a plot of dirt and you're trying to grow some stuff and you're a little low on organic matter to put on there and you're like, I need to add some fertility. What's your first thing that you're going to add as fertility?
Well, you can pee around the plants.
That's where I'm going.
You can also, like, we all produce a lot of kitchen scraps, you know, so like all the little peels and bits that we would, you know, give to the chickens can be put underneath that layer of mulch, and that's a ton of nitrogen that will go right into your land. So I think those two sources are excellent.
I think that it's amazing what will happen if you just add urine to a lot of your systems. If you're missing fertility, then, of course, you grow all of this. And if you want, like, have this section over here growing some grasses of some kind, and then you put all the urine over there, and those grasses just go crazy, and they're huge, and they're doing so good. And then you can take those grasses and use those as your mulches. Use it as your hay. Make your own hay. So, all right.
Well, Samantha, you can make a lot of hay for yourself. You can make a lot of hay for yourself just by allowing a portion of your lawn to grow and without mowing it and give it a lot of nutrient, and the grass will really take off, and then you can just cut it down and use it as your mulch.
When you watch Helen Attow's Garden Master Course, and hopefully somebody will put a link into the chatty chat there, she shows that the system that she does now is she does these, like, looks like an 8-foot-wide swath, which is where she grows her current market garden. And then there'll be 16 feet of grass and whatever weeds are growing. And then each year she'll move 8 feet over. So the old plot will now get covered in weeds and grasses. But what she'll do is that when the grass gets to be like a foot and a half tall, she mows it all down to the ground, and then she takes all that stuff she just mowed, and that is her hay mulch. And it's like, that is just brilliant. And so on top of that, there's that whole movement of food, not lawns, and I want to say that I wish they would change it to more food than lawns, maybe, because I think lawns have a place. It's a great place for there to be a picnic table for the kids to play or for people to do their yard sales. There's just tons of stuff where a yard is great. And but on top of all that, you could let it get a little bit long and then cut it, and now that's your hay mulch to put on something. So, all right.
Anything. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, Samantha, like, do you have anything else to say about Back to Eden?
Oh, Back to Eden. I think if you can find a good clean.
Uh-oh. I think your internet crapped out. I can't hear you.
Can I hear
you
now?
We missed some of what you said. There was something that went silent.
If you can find a good clean source of chips, and I know that that is a hard thing in a lot of situations, but if you have a good source of chips and you know they're clean, I think that the mycelium grows extremely well underneath the wood chips. I think I would see mycelium grow and begin right away, it seems like, when you lay those wood chips down, certainly faster than I would see it growing underneath a hay mulch or even a leaf mulch. It seems like if you lay down wood chips and then you just dig into it for whatever reason, you see that white mycelium going all over. So I think in a situation where you want that and you need to hold that nutrient, I think that's an option. I don't think it's going to give you, it's not going to give you the same results as doing a mulch or doing a hay. But I think it's something to play with if you know that you have clean materials. I think you might be able to get something similar by going out in the forest and getting, rotting logs or, a woody debris that comes off of the hedge or something. I think you could get a lot of that without having to chip the wood. You don't have to have it be small. It could be just old rotten stuff.
I would much rather take branches or logs or twigs or whatever and not chip them and just lay them down as a mulch. I do think that a good thing is you take some nice pruners out there. Oh, come on. What are you doing? And I've got my pruners here, but somehow they've like hooked onto a thing. Like, what are you? Like the little carrier has got like a little something. There we go. Pruners! Yes! So, go out and take the pruners and knock it up into pieces that are like a foot long. So if you got a big long branch and loppers, bigger, like pruners on steroids, pruners with 2 foot long handles, knock those pieces up. That was kind of weird. That's kind of too bad. First time that ever happened. Then it lays flat on the ground. Because, you got this big branch that's like 15 feet long or something, and you go to lay it down, and it's all, wow! And it's like not exactly helping out with the mulchy mulch. And it's like, I want it to touch the ground. But I'm going to say, I'm gonna make a general statement, and I'm going to say, until you get to be like a level 7 or 8 gardener, never use wood chips. In fact, I'm going to go and say it a little bit differently. Anytime you're tempted to use wood chips, you're doing it wrong. And that's just because I've seen way too many people use the words that you just used.
The mycelium?
No. Wood chips. Like, let's say you have a good, clean source of wood chips.
Oh, okay.
Well, and it's like that part where, let's say, that's where it all falls
really
apart.
You don't really know. Yeah.
It's like, oh, man, that's such a failure point.
Do you think you'd get the same result if you were to take branches and like just make a really nice layer of branches and then cover that maybe with dirt or something so that you can get that experience of the soil and I don't know if it's the wood that's making the mycelium?
I don't like what you're proposing.
Okay.
I don't like the idea of putting the dirt on top of it. You're thinking wood chips, and it's like, so A, don't bring them in, and B, don't run a wood chipper.
Well, I'm just noticing the mycelium growth, and so I'm quite wondering how else would we get that?
Ooh, oh, good. That's exactly where I was going next. How else do you get that? And it's like, perfect. Now, you have been to my property many times, including in the summertime, right?
Yes.
And you've been to the Dances with Pigs Meadow.
Yes.
You've probably been to the Dances with Pigs Meadow when it's all green and covered in flowers.
Uh-huh.
And you've probably also been there like in August when it's all brown.
Brown, yep.
You may have even been here in like October when it's kind of like brown but speckled with mildew.
Yes.
Okay. All right. What I'm trying to say is you're saying I want a high-carbon organic matter that mycelium is going to love.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying Dances with Pigs Meadow.
Okay.
When the stuff is all gross and not even the deer want to eat it,
yeah.
Go and get a truckload of that. In fact, I can tell you that the boots do it all the time, and you can fill a truck in like under half an hour. Like that truck is now heaping with this stuff. Then when you buzz over to like Allerton Abbey and unheap it onto your gardens, I would have to say that this product is far superior to wood chips.
It's going to be a lot faster.
And no chipper was used. There's a thing that Stephen likes to call it the golf club cutter, because you kind of swing it like a golf club. It has like a, it kind of comes down and then it goes over and then has like a little blade on the end.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. That's kind of serrated. And when I watched the movie Cool Hand Luke, they call it a yo-yo. And that's why I keep trying to say it's a yo-yo, because I watched that Cool Hand Luke movie, but he calls it a golf club cutter. And it's like, all right, fine. But they go over with those and they go whackety, whackety, whack. And of course, you know, if you want to get really cool, you can use the scythe. But I think everybody likes the golf club cutter better than the scythe. I think the scythe makes you look cool. And you could probably do more with the scythe. But the golf club cutter, I don't know. It's like it's a stepping stone to the scythe, maybe. People just like them better than the scythe. I don't know why, but fine. That's cool.
The scythe is more fun if everything is standing up nicely and there's no sticks in the grass. I think if it's a mashed down old dead grass and there's sticks, it would be nicer with your golf club.
Plus, the scythe is a kind of a piece of art, beautiful thing.
It's a special thing. You're not screwing around with it with sticks.
If you hit a rock or a stick or something like that, you're like, oh no, I'm ruining the art. But if you're in there with that $7 yo-yo, you're like, yeah, well, I got another one in the truck. If I break this one, I don't care. You know? So
I think you also release a lot more anger with the yo-yo than with the scythe, you know? So it's kind of a release of sorts.
With the scythe, you kind of have this feeling of responsibility. But with the yo-yo, no, you're just going to get the job done. And so, yeah, I think that's probably part of it, but...
Put Paul's brain on your plot. Do you have a hunk of land but don't know where to start? Do you have a world-changing permaculture idea and you need some feedback? Do you feel like the guy in overalls may inexplicably hold the keys to all your wildest permaculture and homesteading dreams? Well, you're probably wrong. But if you want to give it a go anyway, you can hire Paul for a consultation. He will be all yours for a whole entire hour. Schedule your Paulversation today at permies.com/consult. permies.com/consult.
But the key is you were saying, what if we had this magical unicorn wood chips that we could get? And I think I came up with something far better than your best wood chips.
I think it depends a lot on where you are and what you have. This guy in the peninsula, there's a lot of logging. You know, I bet wood chips are as easy to get as anything, but you have meadows full of grass. So for you, making wood chips would be ridiculous. But for him, maybe it makes sense.
Well, I do have a sawmill, and we get a lot of sawdust at that sawmill, and we do use it sometimes for mulch. But these are our trees where we, I mean, now that we've been here more than 11 years, and also when I bought the property because one of the reasons, one of the deal breakers for me, this property was covered in weeds. Clearly, nobody has ever used any weed killer here.
Yeah.
And so, and the funny thing is that a friend of mine walked the property with me and he's a forester, and he was saying, like, what are you going to do about all these weeds? Oh, there's so many. You've even got this. And I believe my response to him at that moment was, because like he was pointing to a patch of knapweed. What are you going to do about this knapweed patch right here? And I said, wherever I have a knapweed patch, that's where I want to plant a permie. You know, somebody sets up shop there. They start building a little something. They start growing a little garden. They're going to rip out all that knapweed right away. But
yeah, knapweed's not so bad. I don't think. I mean, the butterflies like it. When I had my geese here, they enjoyed it. And it's really no problem.
The first month we were here, I think we brought in three different, like, 5-gallon bucketfuls of different knapweed predators, like things that thought knapweed's yummy and only knapweed is yummy. But you'll also notice that, and I know that, Samantha, you've claimed a little patch of hugel culture near the house as your garden. How much knapweed have you ever seen on that?
None. There's no knapweed.
I think,
but if there was, I wouldn't mind because I just pull it up and use it as mulch. I mean, I don't think the knapweed is a problem. If you have too much of something, you can just over harvest it and use it. And I know, I think in the sauna, you were using it as your using knapweed as straw to make your straw walls. It's a great plant. I mean, I don't feel like a plant is really a problem. If you have too much of a plant, you just over-harvest it, and it's not a problem anymore.
Instead of wood chips.
Oh, yeah.
Well, anytime you got wood chips, I think you should at least entertain the thought that you're doing it wrong. Like, I cannot think of a scenario with wood chips where it's good. You know, at least, I mean, if you get up to, like, level 7, level 8, then yeah. You can find where there's a bunch of wood chips somewhere because they took a load of logs and you saw where the logs came from and you saw it was infested with weeds and they took it to a mill and the mill has this mountain of wood chips. Sure, now we're talking about level 7 gardening though. And that means we're down to, like, I don't know, is level 7 like 10,000 people out of the whole world? And it's like, I think most of the people watching this video are going to be a strong level 3, which is going to be like, what, 1 million people in the world? And so I'm going to say, like, don't, you know, generally the general feeling, the general thought, what I want to push on the people is like, if you should at least have the thought that if you're using wood chips in any form, you're doing it wrong. Just have the thought.
I think that anything, I mean, I would certainly pick dead grass or knapweed or any kind of lighter weight vegetation over something heavy like a stick or a wood, because the mouths of the creatures that are eating that are very small. They're going to have the ability to chew into a piece of dead grass much more easily than a piece of wood. So if you, in terms of getting that carbon into your soil and incorporating it into the earth so you can grow your plants, that's way faster if it's a piece of straw or a piece of dead grass than if it's a piece of woody material. So it's definitely a higher choice, I think. And you can see when, like, if you have a pile of grass, like, you know, rotting straw, you can see the root itself going into there and getting that, you know, growing right into that piece of straw. And that's, and to me, that's what it's all about, is that line between the plant and the material it's taking it from. So that's where your soil is being, it's like being created right there.
Or the mycelium, you see the fruiting body of the mushroom. And if you go digging around in there, you see all these mycelium networks and roots and things. So it's like clearly the mycelium are far happier with this gross straw than with wood chips.
Yeah, especially if you're just getting started, you're going to see the benefit a lot quicker with a smaller material, with the straw.
One other problem I've seen with the people trying to do Back to Eden, they'll get cedar wood chips. They'll get like those cedar shavings that they use for kind of like mulching around things and stuff. And they'll get tons of this stuff that's cedar. And how does cedar do with your gardens?
Cedar does not help things grow. It likes to make things not grow. That's why people use cedar to line their, you know, make their raised beds or to make their deck, because it doesn't rot very well. You can find cedar trees in the forest that have been there for probably hundreds of years, dead on the ground, just lying there. It doesn't, they don't rot hardly at all, which is
and
cool.
Cedar trees will grow out of them, but like nothing else will. You can walk through those forests of cedars and there's nothing else there. But apparently, cedar has four different kinds of natural herbicides in all cedar duff, which I think is rather fascinating.
That's okay. Pretty cool, yeah.
Let's change gears a little bit. I got another topic to bring up. And building rich soil when mulch is not available. So before I do this, maybe each of you could take a stab at it. So Samantha, go ahead and take a try. You're going to build rich soil. You got dirt. And you don't have any mulch. You have dirt.
So one thing that I think is pretty fun is, like, if it's a lawn or if it's just land that's kind of growing whatever.
Let's say there's no lawn.
You can actually take clods of that dirt and build yourself mulch out of the dirt. And if you take yourself a pitchfork and you grab clumps, and then you lay those out in a long, you know, in a heap, maybe throw some other stuff in there, whatever you have, really. You're, by creating the shelter on top of the surface, you're creating that mulch environment. You don't have all the wonderful nutrients that you get in your hay or your straw, but you have created the shelter so the worm can come up and he can do his business and he can be safe and the other little creatures will come in there and it will produce a soft land. And then when you push that away, you can reach your hand right in there. Even if it was so hard you couldn't push through with a shovel, if you cover it with a layer of clods of earth or dirt, even stones. I mean, you could go down and get big old boulders and lay those on there. And when you pull those away, that land is soft. And you'll find places where the vole came up and made a tunnel and screwed around under there. And the worm came up and pooped. And the land has been protected from the evaporation. So all the water that came down and landed on all those rocks was stored there. And it will produce good soil, even if you don't add anything. You just cover the land.
So I do want to say a weird and funny thing about that. That is an idea that was presented like in 1930, something around in there, as like, hey, if you don't have mulch, you can make your own out of the dirt that's already there. And then we had the Dust Bowl. So yes,
I think it takes
what you're saying is entirely true. What you're saying is true, and it's not a new thing, and it does work. It is effective, and that was why. And so many people loved that idea way back then. That's how we got the Dust Bowl.
I'm not sure what caused the Dust Bowl, but it does have, you know. And then where I live, they do something called dust mulch, which is, I think, not beneficial, but it does work. It's can be 6-8 inches or more of just loose dirt, which blows away or washes away. But if it doesn't blow away or wash away, it will insulate the lower soil and it acts like a mulch. And then the next year they will be able to grow a great crop. Long term, it's not a good idea. And I much prefer the clods or the rocks technique because something that doesn't blow away, even just laying logs on your soil will cover them and cover the soil and create that environment.
Okay, so the question is, building rich soil when mulch is not available. Now, I'm going to say the rocks thing works, but the rocks thing I think would count as mulch. And so, because I think rocks make a great mulch. But, okay, we're going to – and then on top of that, for the rocks and the dirt clods – we're trying to talk about building rich soil when mulch is not available. Now, I do think that the thing about the clods, so there's no mulches available, but the thing about the clods, it kind of makes things worse, but it does kind of make things better. And so part of it would be, I think that if you were to like if you're on flat land, if you were to texture. Now, I do want to say that there's a picture that I use when I do my presentation on replacing irrigation with permaculture. There's a picture of this flat space where apparently they tried to grow cotton for years, and then finally they depleted the soil of organic matter so much that it's just cracked clay. That's all you see is cracked clay. So the part where the clay cracked and grew up, there's a little bit of shade under there, kind of like what you're talking about, but still nothing grew. It was just cracked clay. The story is that the guy came in with a yeoman's plow to do what's the word?
Key line.
He's coming in to do the key line stuff, and so he did the. That's all he did is he just drove the key line plow around. So basically. Didn't add any mulch, but things changed enough by driving the key line plow around in the key line way that now there's a whole bunch of weeds growing there. And that is building soil. So that's big. You know. All right. Now, I feel like I'm cheating, but Samantha, I want to give you one more try. Building rich soil when mulch is not available. Now, let's pretend that it's a home gardener. So they've got a quarter of an acre to work with, but it's a quarter acre of dirt. And so, go. I know you can come up with 12 things, like, in an instant.
Well, one thing that you're doing with that key line is you're allowing water to get into the soil, but you're also kind of claiming a deeper level of soil or a deeper level of dirt as your growing surface. So if I have, I've got, 8 inches of what I could think of as topsoil, even though maybe it's not very nice, it's this top soil, and I say that the first 6 inches is my mulch, I can, make a furrow and plant in my furrow, and then the existing surface is my new mulch, and I'm taking water and nutrient from a deeper level. So that's something that you could do, and then the next year you do it again, and it's going to be better every time you do that. And if you can do that without disturbing too much, like I love the key line because whatever little plants are growing there, their root is not disturbed. So I'm digging a nice deep trench through it with my key line plow, but everything that I didn't disturb isn't bothered, and so I don't lose to wind or to water flowing through. I don't lose that. So even the tiny roots of just a little insignificant plant, it holds that soil together. So I think that that's a way that you could, by basically just calling the top surface mulch and the lower surface your growing surface.
Okay. Clay, you want to take a stab at it? Building rich soil when mulch is not available.
I mean, if I could get any sort of plant established at all, I think that would be my first thing, is that if we're talking about dirt, right, it's lifeless.
Dirt.
And so if there's any hope of maybe a type of grass or whatever weed is in the ditch, as Joel Salatin likes to say, if we can get that started, then maybe that'll bring the life and start kickstarting a transformation of that dirt into soil. And so I think that if I had absolutely no mulch and, I didn't have a key line plow or couldn't get it on my quarter acre backyard, then yeah, I think that I would simply start by planting something.
I would say that's where I would begin as well. And so, I would try like a dozen different species of things that will tolerate growing on absolute dirt. And then, we're going to be able to water them. So there's going to be some irrigation available. And then on top of that, there's going to be whatever comes out of the kitchen, which Samantha mentioned before. And then there's the whole pee on it thing. But, adding any kind of fertility to this land is going to help it along. But I would say that if it's absolute dirt, the thing I'm probably going to try earliest is going to be anything that is both a nitrogen fixer and has a spiky taproot. And so the spiky taproot will just dig down into that dirt and start, you know, doing the exchange with the animals and whatever else. And so, but, you know, let's start the process of building soil, even if it's going to be slow. And so, I would say, when it comes to those kind of species, lupins!
Lupin is a great one. If you have water, you'll make a huge change just to water.
And here's some more. I got more than one kind.
That crimson clover?
Lupin.
Oh, cool.
Lupin. Yeah. So I got two different kinds of lupin sitting right here. But lupin is a nitrogen fixer, and they have a taproot. I would try different kinds of alfalfa, but alfalfa can be very pH picky. But there are some grasses that will tolerate absolute dirt. But most grasses are kind of like, if you don't have nitrogen, I'm not working here. I might try a tall fescue. So there's a ruminant-friendly endophyte tall fescue. So it has kind of a fungus in the plant that'll help the plant thrive, even if there's not good nutrition in the soil. But anyway, there's lists and lists and lists of things that I think would be really, I mean, I would even try sunchokes just because they tolerate such terrible soil. I would also try to get some black locust trees started. But okay, so we don't have any mulch and we're trying to build good soil. I would say I want to start planting things that'll be tough on dirt and then go out there and I want to pee on them. You know, I want to, here's some nutrient. Let's get started. Let's get this beginning. And, I don't know if you guys have ever seen the pictures of the hookah cultures that are built here at base camp that first year as they're being built, but
yeah, I was here. It was a good place when that was happening. Yeah.
Oh,
it was
cool.
Like sand piles and just straight up dirt. You could hardly get it to stay on the hookah until you brought in another round of logs.
Yeah.
It was just dust a lot of times, but now it's like real soil.
We pretty much ignored it for the first 5 years, and then the soil just got better and better and better. And I don't think it was even so much peeing on it because we hadn't like made any paths or trails or ways to get up there. So nobody wanted to go and put that stuff up there. Wasn't even very much kitchen scraps or anything put up there either. There were some spots where we put the kitchen scraps in the later years, but it seems like for a while, all the kitchen scraps are always placed down low or it's easy to get at and nobody tried to go up high. But just stuff kept growing and stuff kept growing and stuff kept growing and then the soil got better and better. I don't think that the soil's, well, and then it was a year ago that we got water, and so we could start to irrigate, and so that helped a lot. But yes, having the access to water makes
all the difference.
Yeah,
a lot of our lands that are dry in summer or cold in winter, they create a lot of organic matter that doesn't have a chance to break down. And so when you do add moisture to those landscapes, you'll find that land is really fertile, even though it didn't appear to be in its natural environment. If you just add water and try growing stuff, a lot of stuff will grow.
I'm going to set that one aside. The next thing I have is just too perfect. I have to get this in here. When I say deep mulch to people, it's pretty hilarious what they do, and they point at it and say, I did what you said. But what they point at isn't even an inch thick. So when I say deep mulch, I would say that the thinnest deep mulch would be 3 or 4 inches. But really, I'm thinking, like, can we do 8? Like, 8 is good. When you say deep mulch and you're getting into 12-inch territory, I would start to think, like, that might be too much. I mean, granted, if it's a lot of logs, maybe that's all right. But, okay, when I say deep mulch to you, Samantha, what do you think that means?
Enough mulch that you've really created a different environment at the surface. So maybe you throw down 12 or 14 inches of hay when it's all fluffy, and then it gets watered on, it gets walked on, and it gets trampled down. But if you haven't changed the environment of the surface, like you just have a little scattering of grass, you really haven't done anything. It's a little better. You're going to hold a little more water, going to catch a little more dew, but you haven't done a mulch. And until, I mean, if the grass can grow through it, it's really not a deep mulch. You're just, you know, kind of sheltering the land. But I think you have to really change the environment so that those creatures that live in the soil come up to be on your surface.
Clay, what do you think of when I say deep mulch?
Kind of piggybacking off of Samantha's answer, no light penetration. Like we're creating a space where no grass can grow, like the sun isn't going to burn all these little worms and bugs and whatnot that come up to the soil surface. And so when I think of deep mulch, really no light should be penetrating that. And it should be, yeah, smothering out things that you don't want as you've kind of laid it all down there.
I'm going to say that deep mulch has to be so thick that it would smother everything. So grasses are going to be some of the most persistent. I mean, I would say anything with really incredibly deep taproots like Canadian thistle or I can see it in my head and I'm trying to like field bindweed. Those, I think you're probably never going to be able to mulch thick enough to get rid of those. But if it's thick enough that you're going to kill off most species or possibly even all the species right there, and then it's, I don't know, 50% thicker than that, that's deep mulch. But it has been, it's like, and I could even say, put the mulch down at least 6 inches thick. I'll say those words, and then they'll ask me to come back and take a look at how great it is. Look, I did what you said. It's, you know, and it's like not even an inch thick. And it's like, are you using a broken metric system or something? So I don't know. It's one of those weird things where it's like I can't communicate it, or I don't know, maybe there's something that has to happen to be different so that people can hear 6-inch thick mulch. Because I'll talk to, this is like Mel Bartholomew writing his book Square Foot Gardening. He says he wrote this whole book because he got tired of saying the exact same thing over and over and over again and being ignored. At least if it's written down, they can't say, you didn't say that. There it is, written down. This is, I handed it to you, I showed it to you, it's written down. And now they can't say that he didn't say it. So, but this is deep mulch is a big thing. So I just wanted to make a point of saying, like, it is so weird to me how, when we talk about mulch, how people can't seem to hear it. And it's not like I'm just talking about boots in the boot camp. I'm talking about, I've been to so many different properties and try to talk about it. And then they're like, look, I'm so proud. Take it. Praise me. And it's like, that's not what I said. That's, in fact, you're just going to feed the grass that's there. That's, you're not even smothering the grass. Anyway, I feel glad to be able to take this moment to share this wackadoodle thing about deep mulch and the phrase deep mulch.
Well, some folks might be more comfortable putting it down in layers, you know, like put it down a nice, what you think of as a deep mulch, and then water it and watch it for a while, and then put down another layer and, you know, see how your plants do and just keep adding. If you're, you know, putting down a whole bunch at once seems like too much or too hard or too weird, just add more after a bit. Because if you put down a really deep mulch of dry material, it can take a while for your the land under your mulch to get wet, depending on the time of year. So maybe just watering it in and letting it settle and then adding more to see how that looks.
I like what you're saying. I want to add a weird frosting onto that, and that is that I think that when you get in about the fourth year of doing this, the effort becomes one-tenth of what it was when you were starting. Like, on the fourth year, you don't mulch nearly as much. You don't have as many weeds. Most of the weeds that are growing there are volunteer food plants. And so you don't care. It's a bit like how in that first year here, we had knapweed everywhere. And then after about 3 years, we had no knapweed. And then we had, then we kind of went to war on, prickly lettuce. And now we rip out prickly lettuce. Now there's hardly ever any prickly lettuce. It gets, so as we're talking about what mulch to lay down and how to build soil and things like that, I think that part of it is that you get to the point where on these beds, they're pumping out a whole bunch of food and you go and you make a whole new bed over there. And now on the first bed, you really don't have much work to do except to harvest. All right. You guys keep going. I'll be right back.
I think that harvesting only is especially true if you've built hugelkultur and you've planted perennials. There are wonderful hugel beds here at Wheaton Labs where you can just go out there in the early spring and it looks like somebody planted the garden, but they've stuff is coming up much earlier than if you were to plant seeds, and it's all the perennials that are coming out of the land. So we didn't, you know, somebody worked hard at it 1 year, and the stuff just keeps proliferating. There's lovage out there that's bigger every single year. It's kind of like celery when you eat it, but it's a perennial, and there's no work involved. You just walk out there and pick it. There's walking onions that are growing. A lot of the stuff will reseed itself too, like the kale and the peas. They just roll on down the hill, the little seeds, and grow again. Another fun one is the living mulch from the pennycress. It's a plant that you can eat. It's a kind of a spicy herb, and you can eat that in the spring. And then as the summer rolls on, the pennycress stops growing and it goes dormant and is just a dead looking weed. But that's acting as a mulch on the landscape. So the water will be retained in the soil because that plant is there. And if you want, you can pick it and lay it down as a mulch in a different place to smother something. And then those seeds will come up and grow you more pennycress next year. So I think if you want to work less, then perennials are going to be the best thing. And the perennials are able to go deeper because they live year after year. And so they're getting minerals that are deeper in the soil than your annual garden. So I think those are two great ways to not have to do so much work in our gardens. I was just saying, like, you have garden beds out there in your hugelkultur that are covered in perennials. And so even if nobody went to garden, there's food there, and there's food sooner in the springtime than there would be if you were to plant seeds. You know, there's lovage and stuff coming up way before the kale or any of those little cool spring plants get sprouted. They sprout on their own, of course, because the seeds are in the ground, but the perennials will be ready sooner. We think that's fun.
The last point I want to talk about is the glorious diversity of deep mulch. And then I got plus the correct way to chop and drop. So first let's talk about the glorious diversity of deep mulch. So I kind of feel like one of the things that I do is I go back to the drain field where there's like all the hay you want growing right there on the drain field. And I go back there with a sickle and I take those firewood carriers out and I load up the firewood carriers. So now I've got these two giant bundles of basically freshly cut hay. And then I can come back and I can lay that down as a thick mulch, like a good 6 to 10 inches thick. And it's going to definitely smother whatever's underneath it. And then on another spot, like, we just cut down a tree somewhere and now we've got like this pickup truck load of branches. And it's like, okay, so now I'm going to go lay these branches in a bunch of different places. And, then there's the chop and drop. Maybe there was, cutting down some knapweed or some of the prickly lettuce or something that I don't want. And that'll be in another spot. The key is what I'm trying to get to here is to say, I love the idea of having like 20 different kinds of mulches and it's not spread out evenly. It's all blotchy. It's all in different spots, different mulches in different spots. Oh, the root stout composting that we do. So you take a bunch of kitchen scraps and you go splort, and then you throw a bunch of sawdust over it. There, that's a mulchy spot. It's going to smother whatever's under it. And it's like, great. So I want to go with diversity. And the last thing I want to touch on is the correct way to chop and drop. And this is another thing where I've been to I don't know how many places. It happens here, but in many places it's not just limited to here. And you try to explain this to people and they just can't do it. And this is, and the way that I generally describe it is like, let's say you're going to try to smother grass and you're going to try to use grass to smother grass. So you're going to go and you're going to have these three units of grass and you're going to cut all three. You're going to make a wad and you're going to cover the first unit of grass. You're not going to cover the second two units of grass. And those are just going to grow back up. But the first unit of grass is going to end up being smothered. So this is what I describe. And then what they always do is they cut three units of grass and then they spread it out over the three units of space. And what does that do? It feeds the grass on all three units. Whereas what I was proposing was they would smother one unit and not feed the other two units. And so for me, this is the correct way to chop and drop. You got to get enough stuff that you're chopping to be able to drop it in such a way that it'll smother the stuff that you don't want. But it takes a lot.
You'll need more land surface of mulch gathering area than the amount of area that you're going to mulch. So you'll need to go further afield than your actual garden bed to go get material to bring in. If you're going to mulch it enough, because there isn't enough growing right there to fully mulch that garden just by chopping it down, you'll need to go outside the garden. Or to a maybe do a small bit of garden at a time. But yeah, one patch of land is not going to grow enough vegetation to fully smother that patch of land.
All right. You got anything, Clay?
No, I definitely echo Samantha on that. I've done some chop and drop, but yeah, I you need more than just what you're mulching. Other than that, I think I'm good.
So, this whole thing started off with how we can replace a soil test, or what the answer to a soil test almost universally is. And so I can say I've done a lot of soil tests, you know, lab test soil tests, and you get back the NPK. I don't even like to think about NPK anymore. I mean, sometimes I need to. Sometimes it's like, for example, with my friend's trees, pretty obvious it's suffering from a lack of nitrogen. So I want to bring in something that's going to be nitrogen heavy. Now, granted, you know, the hay tea that came through when it rained wasn't exactly just pure nitrogen. It was, you know, a bunch of different nitrogen-heavy compounds, and which is what this tree was super tasted up for. So I think it's good to have some knowledge of NPK, but, oh, I just hate the idea of gardening that way. And so the whole thing about, like, the universal answer is to just improve the quality of the soil and add mulch. And that'll solve almost anything that you're going to try to do with a soil test. In fact, you'll get the soil test, and then you'll add all of that same mulch. So why even bother with the soil test? So clearly there's a time when the soil test might be very, very necessary. But I think for most of the time, without the soil test, the answer is almost universally the same. And there could be some weird exceptions where you're going to get some soil tests done in order to be able to figure some stuff out and understand it. So I feel like we're done with this topic. We're all good. We covered a lot of extra stuff that I felt was really good. And you guys got anything else you want to add to this one? I see Samantha trying to talk, but I don't hear any sound. I see your lips moving.
Hi, I'm sorry. I muted myself again. Tim made a comment about the height of the hugel beds and the seed distribution and things rolling down the hugel. And one thing I've played with is when I'm doing a chop and drop, if it's something I pull out by the roots, then that's fine. I just throw the root up, like when I lay it on the hill, like leave the root clod, and I put that in the uphill so the plant itself is facing downhill. Or if I'm cutting it, I'll put the heavy end, the ground end, up the hill and lay it down so that, because a lot of times it will come down the hill, but if you lay it vertically and then you have the heavier part uphill, that seems to really help.
I think the last permaculture smackdown we did was hugel culture, and I think we went into a lot of detail about how to keep the mulch up on the sides of a very steep hugel culture. So that might be worth checking out.
We're also going to have a bit of a collection of things, a permaculture heap of things for hugel beds coming out in a few days. So if folks want to learn more about hugel culture and kind of get a lot of hugel culture knowledge all together, you might keep your eye out for that. It should be a really good deal.
Liv asked if she can make a bundle.
She wanted to call it a heap because it's for hugel culture.
Yeah. And so that's I've been observing what she's putting together. It is going to be a lot of stuff. And so that'll be cool. All right. If you like this sort of thing, come on out to the forums at permies.com, where we talk about soil tests, homesteading, and permaculture all the time.
All the time.
In a world on the brink of social collapse, one website stands above the rest to fight back the zombie horde of corporate trolls. Permies.com. Take back control of your destiny and protect your loved ones from the toxic gick coming at you from all directions. Strap on your overalls and start building that bunker of abundance with the good vibes and friendly, helpful insight found at Permies.com.